Cohart. Okay, we're about to go on.
Radio.
Good evening and welcome to TBA Lounge, also known as the Best Authors Lounge, where the best authors are made and showcased. I'm your host, Edwina Davis. It's 8 p.m. on Eastern on October 3rd. We are delighted to be here. Got some very special guests for you tonight. And our topic tonight is street or urban lit, whatever you want to call it, doing what it do. Our first guest tonight is someone very special. He's known as Cole Hart. Some of you may be familiar with his work or be familiar with him on Facebook. Cole is actually calling us from the Georgia State Penitentiary, so we want to give Cole a big virtual round of applause. Thank him for his time. Thank him for being on here. And we're going to get started with him. If our other guests call in, we will jump right in with them as well. Want to remind our listeners that if you'd like to ask our guest a question or have a comment for our guest, you can press 1. That effectively raises your hand so I'll know you're not just listening. Our call-in number is 323-693-3857. And if you're in the chat room, just type in your question or your comments, and I will be happy to share that with our guest. All righty, Mr. Cole Hart, how are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm great. I am so delighted to have you here tonight. I really, you know, appreciate your calling in. So let's jump right in. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So you've been in the state penitentiary for some time. Tell our listeners, one of my main questions for you was, how in the world does somebody who's been a prisoner for some time get to write several books, publish several of them, and start his own publishing company? Start there.
Okay, well, let me see. I'll say, as far as my writing, I mean, just being a prisoner, I've been writing since 2001. And I actually started writing, it started out as a joke how my writing career began, because it was like, you know, a lot of guys in here, they hang signs up on the TV, and, you know, it was one winner, and it was like, they had hung a sign up on the TV, and there was a little argument going on, and guys, they wanted to watch this, and the other guys wanted to watch this. So I just took upon myself, just hung up a sign on the TV, and it was like, I really just came up with a lot. It was just a little entertainment for the dorm, but they didn't know it. You know what I mean, I told them it was a movie coming on with Trino, Brett, and Eve in it. And, a lot of guys in prison, they be open for that, you know what I mean? I'm telling them, like, yeah, they in the feds, man. They dance in the strip clubs, based in Miami and in Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? And I told them the name of the story, Apples and Earns to Peaches, you know what I mean? We just went by the states, you know, so they was ready. I had them put the time up there, you know what I mean? So everybody in the mall, they seats. And after that, after the 9 o'clock, when the 9 o'clock struck and it moved and come on, everybody was looking for me. But I wasn't nowhere to be found. So my partner, they come to my room, and it was like, when you come up with this, what happens to the movie? You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, the movie ain't come on? You know what I mean? So a few of them got mad at everybody. One of my partners, he had stepped to me. He was from New Jersey. And when he had stepped to me with the idea of a book, he was like, where you come up with that idea from? And I'm like, just off the top of my head. So he was like, man, we can write a book to that. You know what I mean? And he went on telling me, I'm like, a book? I ain't even believe it. So he went and brought me some short stories and stuff that he hadn't wrote, but I had never wrote nothing before. But anyway, on that part right there, afterwards, he was like, he had to back out on the writing. We wrote like 4 pages, you know what I mean? And it was over with after that. So I guess I kind of just took it upon myself to go ahead and complete that book. And that was like the first book that I had wrote like in 2001. And I had actually sent it to, Terry Woods. It took her like 13 months to deny the book. But, you know, my prison partners, they were feeling it, you know what I mean? So that just kept me pushing on. So I continue. I wound up self-publishing the book myself, just really coming up with, start coming up with ideas and here trying to come up with my publishing company name and my logo, and just everything was just did from in prison. I got a cat to type it up for me and went from there. Then I wrote another one, which was called Money Chain Faces Part 1 and 2. And really, like, the first three of them was like self-published. There wasn't no ISBN numbers on. I was getting covers put on them, and I was sending them out to my daughter's mother, and she was having her mother to sell them in her little gift shop down in Augusta, Georgia. So, and they were just selling them in the streets and just like that right there. So it had got to the point where this is where I'm going, you know what I mean? And I just never gave up. So I continued to push. So that was like 2002, 3, 4, 5. So really by, I would say, 07, 08, I had a setback because I had one of my partners that had got out of, we supposed to have just started the publishing company together. And, you know what I mean? I had gave him the option where I was going to let him be the co-author just so he can get out there and do book signings and push the books. But, you know, he kind of got out and went astray. But, you know, and that set me back like 2 years because I pulled away from what I had going on to trying to, you know, showing loyalty on this end, but the loyalty didn't come back. So, that, like I said, that set me out 2 years. But I'm kind of getting on the track now. You know, I had got a little, did a little one-book deal with G Street Chronicles and put A-Town Veteran out. And wind up getting my website set up and things like that. So I'm just trying to, you know, it was slow for me just being from here, but I'm like, anything can happen. Anything is possible. So it was just, you know, people have determination out there. It'd be the same way in here, you know, because it's like if you close your eyes are going to be closed, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, people have hope. Everybody have hopes and dreams. That's even from in here, you know what I'm saying? A lot of people's dreams just be like, am I going to get out one day? You know what I mean? So
right.
My dreams, you know, so I mean, I just continue to push it, you know what I mean? And I got like seven books, and I actually lost the book in here when, you know, just being in prison, you already know how it goes. Sometimes you be caught up in, you know, gang activity and, you know, things of that sort. So, you know, in Georgia, they ain't got no problem with putting you on the bus, sending you to another prison. So I had one of my partners, but he would read one of my books, and I got transferred, you know what I'm saying? So
okay.
Before I got transferred, I was in the hole. So I'm like, tell a dude to send my book. So he never sent my book. So they transferred me to another prison. I just lost out on that book. That one.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. But it was like, it really was like one of my best stories. You know what I'm saying? But I still got a little nice little arsenal. And I'm just pushing forward now. I got my business license and everything for Write a Lot Publishing. And, you know, it's been slow. But, I mean, you know, it's turning out to be a little more positive than negative, you know what I mean, from, you know, coming from this end. You know, a lot of people expect, like, okay, you're in prison and doing this, you know what I mean, but...
That's right.
You know.
That's awesome, Cole. I mean, we hear that saying all the time, anything is possible, and we all know that anything is possible, but hearing you speak about your experience just in those few moments, if I weren't a believer before, I certainly am now. And then to hear you say, not like I said to the audience before, not only have you written a book, but started your own publishing company and have written several. Let's go back quickly to your very first book. What was it titled? And how long
it
did it take?
It Seems So Real. My first
book
I
saw
was
that.
It Seems So Real.
It Seems
yeah.
So Real.
And,
okay.
Mm-hmm. And let me see. I want to see. It probably took me like 9, maybe 10 months to write it. Took me like 10 months. And just like I say, by being my first book, I didn't even know which direction to go for until I writing a book. So what I did was I started going to the library and just getting, and I'm asking a lot of cats around. I'm like, who the best authors is? You know what I mean? So they were like Sidney Sheldon, James Patterson, John Gresham. So these are authors that I started reading. I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? So they tell good stories. So I'm studying their writing style and I'm studying their twists and how they flip the stories and everything, you know. So I really just went from there, started taking a lot of notes. So I guess it was just like it was just on some self-talk, but I'm like, if these are the best authors that was out there far as in the prison, you know, because really Sidney Sheldon is like one of my favorite authors.
Is he? Okay.
And, yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite authors because the way he writes his stories, you know what I mean? And, you know, but yeah, that Seems So Real. That was a pretty decent story. To me, it's not my best story, but a lot of guys like it, I guess, because it's coming from a female perspective, you know what I mean? And, well, there's a few females on the street that have read it as well, you know, but at first I just started off just, you know, being in prison. A lot of guys want to read the manuscripts, you know what I mean? Let me read it so it'd be like a long line. That's like I said, that's how I wound up losing one of my books, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, but it's a pretty decent story. I'm actually going to republish it. But like I said, when I put it out, I didn't have no ISBN number. It wasn't edited. It wasn't typeset. I was just putting them out there. Just, you know what I'm saying? Because at the time, really, I didn't, I wasn't really studying it because I had this mentality of, like, okay, well, I'm going to get a publishing deal or whatever, whatever, you know what I mean? But it didn't work like that, you know, so it didn't stop me from driving. It really actually made me push harder, you know.
Yeah, you're pretty incredible. We've got somebody in the chat room who says, how are they, meaning prisoners, able to do this in prison? Wow, and blast your works on social networks. And that was the question I had when I first came across you. I thought, I was a little confused, as I told you. Is he in prison currently, or is he out? Because, like I said, not only has he written one book, he's written several. He's got his own publishing company. He's advertising on Facebook. He's going to do the interview. What in the world? So, yeah, you are quite remarkable. You are remarkable. So you told us how you got started. It wasn't that you were interested in writing. It was kind of you called it a joke. It was as part of a joke.
Yeah.
Very interesting, very interesting. Tell us, I know that for a lot of urban or street lit followers, the readers, I guess, there's a certain credibility they want you to have, or I guess certain street lit writers, urban lit writers have. Do you think that your being in prison now and having lived that life gives you more credibility? Does it in any way help you? Has it hurt you at all? What do you think about that?
I mean, it all depends. It helped me a little bit, you know what I mean, because I really don't look at things like I used to look at, you know, a few years ago when, you know, like a lot of guys in prison, you know, some people, you could be in prison, there'd be a lot of things you glorify. You know, it's just like, you know, coming from the streets, so you grew up in a neighborhood of you with gangbanging or whatever. It was like if you didn't have these certain credentials, like if you ain't did this, or if you ain't kidnapped, or you ain't murdered, if you wouldn't talk about nothing in certain neighborhoods. You ain't got no credibility. So And it was the same way, just like with the rap game, you know what I mean? And a lot of times, a lot of people, they could be sitting back listening and just listening, just seeing if this is what he was doing, or just you got an audience in the streets the same way, you know, if it is with you, if you're a rapper, if you're, you know, you could be Denzel Washington. You're going to always have your artists. You're going to have your own fans, you know. But it'll give you credibility, but it all depends on what you're looking for. I mean, I don't glorify it no more. I used to, but okay. that come with, you know, becoming more of a man, maturing, you know what I mean, and getting away from the negativity, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
right.
Like, now I'm in here, but they got me. I'm like, I'm a mentor. They got a mentoring group at this prison where I met. And it's like for the young cats between ages 18 and 24. So we can speak. We'll meet up every Friday. We'll speak on certain topics about what we got going on. Or, you know, I can really kind of, and it's like me, they call me the street advocate due to the fact that I actually created a character. He and coming from a negative perspective called a street advocate. I'm going to get ready to put these passports out here probably in the next, the first of the year, but it's something I wrote for the youth. And but I had addressed that to the young brothers up here that's in the group, because it's a lot on, like, right now, dealing with a lot of young cats these days, they say off the chain, you know what I mean? I could talk to some of my partners or some of my homies on the street, and they'll be like, bro, they ain't like how we was, or they like 2-3 times worse. And I'm like, yeah, I feel you, because when they get caught up out there, I got to deal with them in here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, you know, I'm talking about just being for real, and there's a lot, you know, the gang activities, it became enormous down here in Georgia now. So even when it comes to prison, so it's like we have to deal with this situation. These situations have to be dealt with, and I like to talk to them and see where they be coming from, because it's like I already know, you know what I mean? Either you came from, you know, your background with your family, or they're just like saying, okay, my mom was an alcoholic and she was getting abused by her boyfriend or whatever. I could deal with any one of my little younger partners that are going through the same thing or whatever. It's like certain things that you will hide because you don't really want to share this with the public. You just really just mad and angry at the world, and it's like, you know what I'm saying? And that's some of the reasons, you know what I mean? And a lot of people really don't know. They'll be like, well, nobody will want to deal with the younger cats or the younger crowd because they really just seeing just so much of the negative, or that's bad or whatever. But you have to, it's like going deeper and looking inside the core, what's really going on, you know what I'm saying?
That's right. And who better to do that than somebody who's lived that life? So I commend you for that. I want to tell our audience, I want to first of all, recognize that we do have our other guest in. I see you, a very, very special guest, and I'll get to you in just a moment. You weren't here to hear the announcement that our guest speaking now is Cole Hart. Cole is an author and publisher from the Georgia State Penitentiary. We wanted to have Cole do his interview first because he's not going to be able to remain during the whole show with us. But wanted to say to our special guest, just hang on. I'll be with you in just a few moments. I wanted to also let the audience know that Cole, when you're speaking about how you're speaking to the young kids out here now who seem to be lost, don't know their way, Your work entitled "Passport United States in America Streets." I'm sorry, "Passport United Streets in America" is awesome. I don't know if you're prepared to read. If you're not, I want to read a few lines from it, if it's okay with you.
Yeah, that's definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right. So you say, "I'm powerful and I'm highly addictive. If you let me get in your mind, I'm capable of spreading through your body and soul. I'll bounce through your veins, and I'm totally what you need to be successful in life. I'm the best addiction in the world, and I'll kill quicker than cancer and AIDS. It all depends if I choose to let you live long or do I want to kill you tomorrow. That depends on me only, and if you don't comply, I may kill you today. In order to beat me and avoid me, you have to be strong-willed, a winner, and a smart thinker. Basically, your own man or your own woman. I'm strong enough to manipulate anybody. I can fly city to city, state to state, and county to country. And my main target, the ones who I specialize in abducting and victimizing, are you, the young African-American youths between the ages of 12 and 21. See, I'm the man that your mama has been warning you about. I got everything it takes, and I'm going to show you how to get it, too. You need me to acquire the luxury that you really want. I'm powerful enough to give a lame major swag and a sucker the heart of a lion. Right now, you're probably sitting back saying to yourself, you can't get me or I'm too smart to be manipulated. Well, let's see about that. First of all, I'm going to introduce myself to you. My name is the Street Advocate, and I'll be your personal tour guide. I'll be thinking for you, I'll create your blueprint, and I'll make you destroy your life because that's what I'm here for. I take pride in brainwashing my young African-American youth. You can live through me and me only. As of now, you don't need to listen to your parents because they're not talking about nothing, no way. I'm the Street Advocate. Let me be your parent." And then you go on. And I just love it. It's very, very powerful.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's something I had wrote that for. They had a Stop the Violence movement down in Augusta. Like last year, one of my partners was supposed to read it for me at the peace walk, but he never did get around to it, and you know what I mean. It really kind of frustrated me. It was like one of my partners we rolled up together with all the way from sixth grade, played football together, worked out together. You know, I was from the streets, and he was from the project as well, but he went going on to college, and you know when he needed my help, you know what I mean, I helped him out, you know, things like that. But it's like, he kind of turned his back on me. I guess he got off in a little corporate America thing, and it didn't work out like that. But it kind of worked out on for the best for him. You know what I mean? Because I'm still trying to push that on out through the, you know, actually finna get the passports printed up. I got DeVito. She working on the book cover and the passport covers and the flyers for the Street Advocate. So that's gonna be my movement that's coming in for next year. And actually, I'll be having the passport be coming free with every book that's sold, one of my books.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be certain having a little passport enough free with it.
Bookmark. Okay. I love that. And, you know, that was going to be one of my questions. There's an age-old discussion about urban or street-lit, you know, whatever you want to call it, about whether or not it has any real legitimacy, whether or not it's bringing down, you know, African-American people. Do the writers of street and urban lit have a responsibility to our kids out here or to our community in general? I want to ask you that question, but I think, you know, you've pretty much answered it. And what I've read from you, particularly that piece, you send a very clear message in a different way. There's a twist to it. I love it. That's very creative. But you send a very clear message that you've lived that life. You're paying the price for it now. You've learned your lesson, and you want to catch some of these kids out here now before they make the same mistakes.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that's what we hear, you know, when if I call home, that's what I'm hearing every day. Well, you know, such and such got shot. You know, your partner's son just got killed. And this is what I'm hearing basically every week to the point where I can call my god sister, and she, you know, I used to call her the China 12 News, so she's going to, report in on everything what's going on in the whole city, you know what I mean? And
right.
She just going to give it to me, you know, such and such got shot or such and such just got locked up or this right here and that right there, but it always something that's to the point now revolving around the young cats, you know what I'm saying? And even with, you know, like the little middle school that I went to, it was called Tupman Rebels, but they took the rebels off because they felt like that was making a lot of kids bad, you know what I mean? But it wasn't that, but like I'm saying, it's, you know, a lot of people, they're going to shy away from it, but it's the parents play a big part in it, regardless of the fact, you know, and it's a lot of things that we can listen to. Sometimes, you know, I love rap music, you know, so, but at the same time, I still can hear some things that, you know, on rap that I'd be like, okay, but see, I'm going on 40. I'll be 40 in a couple of years, so it gets to the point where, like I said, I still love rap music, but it's some things that you can hear in the rap that would, it would have a young cat like, well, this is what I'm finna do. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But see, if you don't know no better, you feel me? You'll go ahead and let this music, the music can amp you up, you know what I mean? And that's what still with Solomon Hill, you know what I mean? It's still the same thing when they come in here to 17, 18, and, you know, but they got pretty good programs, at least at the prison where I'm at, not at all of them. You know, they got a little program here that's pretty good called Favorite Character Base, where they kind of actually helping you with, you know, you help build the characters for the young guys, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Life skills and keeping them more in tune on really what's going on, because all the young cats don't really be just showing up bad. And sometimes they can come in here and get, you know, manipulated and be, they all the cats that's really from the hood, and you got some that's not from the hood, they want it. This is what they've been hearing about these type of guys on rap songs, so now they're in here with them, and they want to be part of this, and dude might say, well, go over there and take them cigarettes from them, or take them, you know what I mean, do this right here, and it'd be problems, you know what I mean? But situations occur, but it's, I'm part of the movement now, you know what I mean, as far as trying to help them on a positive way, instead of,
You are well on your way. You never did tell us, and I know our audience is eager to hear, how. We want to know the how of what you're doing. How, you know, what does your day look like where you can, we both of us probably understand how you can write a book. You're locked up, so you've got probably more time than anything else. But how did you get your business license? How did you, start the publishing company? What did that look like? Tell us the actual house. How did you make it happen? What was it?
Well, actually, my wife got the business license. You know, and it's like, I was just tripping because my partner was playing that hustle hard in the background, right?
Okay.
But that's just what it is. You know, It's the hustle, how bad you want it, because I know there's something that I got to do. So my business life, I got to get that. My wife, like I said, my wife helped me out a lot. We got the website set up,
okay.
And we just moved. She beating the streets down in Atlanta, you know, from Atlanta and Augusta, you know. So she back and forth on I-20, doing what she needed to do, and we just grinding, and we stay prayed up. So we can't lose.
Wow. You know what's interesting about street lit writers, say what you will about those of you who write street or urban lit, but one thing that you guys tend to understand that a lot of other genre authors do not is the hustle. And I guess that hustler mentality comes from what you learned in the streets. But in any business, it's a good thing to have that hustle, to have that energy, to have that spirit of, I've got to do this. There is no plan B. I have to make it happen. So all I have to do now is figure out how. And then you do that. But I've heard other authors, say to me, well, you know, I don't market my book. You know, I wrote the book, but I don't worry about marketing because that's not what I do. And I thought to myself, are you kidding? If that's not what you do, you're not going to sell your book. You're going to maybe have a few friends and family read your book, but that's about it. But you guys seem to get that more than any other authors I've seen out here.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, if you done been in the streets and you had to sell dope before, you know what I mean, or you had to maneuver around the police, and you know what I mean, it's, you hustling right there. You know,
right.
So it's to the point now, this is what we're doing legit, and, you know, with books, you can, like, and that's just like I was reading, I had read that Rich Dad Poor Dad, and he had a little section in there where he was talking about, he had met this female, and he was telling, she had wrote a book or something, but he was telling her that she needed to learn how to sell, get in the sales, so she felt like she was insulted in that book. Like sales, I don't do no sales. You see what I'm saying?
That's
you
right.
Know, but that's just like, you know, it's just like the hustle. You know what I mean? He's telling you right there, you got the hustle if you want it. I mean, because even like I say, especially I have the hustle even extra harder. So even, you know, I'm reading every day. Like right now, we're doing a stage play Thursday because we got a family day coming up for I'm in a group called Life Group, and everybody in the group got life sentences. And also to be some members on the parole board coming down or whatever. But we got a little nice play that I wrote called Only God Can Judge Me. And I've been working on that we've been practicing on it for the last couple of weeks. So that's what we're doing right now. It kind of sat me down because I've been trying to work on A-Town Veteran 2 and a few more things. And then with the little project I got with the passports and everything, I'm trying to get ready to get this website set up for thestreetadvocate.com. And I guess my hands is pretty full here, but I still find time to do what I need to do.
Yeah, and you're remarkable. And now I feel bad because I have days where, you know, I certainly don't consider myself a hustler, but I'm not afraid to work hard. But I do have days where I'm thinking, oh, I don't feel like doing much. But just listening to you and what you're able to do from, you know, where you are, I'm not going to have any more of those days. That's going to be cut out immediately. I really do appreciate you. I'm really enjoying this. I hope our listeners are as well. I want to remind our listeners on the line that if you have a question or a comment for our guests, you can press 1. That effectively raises your hand, so I know that you're not just listening. For those of you in the chat room, please feel free to type your questions or comments. I want to remind everybody else that the call-in number is 323-693-3857. You're listening to author Cole Hart. And by the way, Cole Hart is not your legal name. He was born Jarvis Hardwick. Cole Hart is his pen name under which he writes his books and has established his company. Tell the audience what the name of your publishing company is.
Write a Lot Publishing.
Write a Lot Publishing. And also, because we've got like about 2 or 3 more minutes, I want you to give all of your contact information. Now, Cole, do you publish other authors or you set that company up just to publish your own works?
Right now, just to publish my own work and, you know, try to get myself out here and establish. Really, hopefully in the near future, once I'm free, I'll be able to help others if, you know what I mean, if it come across like that. You know, right now, I'm just kind of branding my name with myself first.
Okay. Excellent. All right, and so tell our audience where they can check you out. Let me say this before you do that. Last week, on our show last week, we had an expert talking about book covers and, you know, what makes a successful book cover, what not to do, things like that. It was a great, very powerful show. We had lots of authors submit their covers. I want to say that it's too bad you weren't aware of that show. You could have submitted yours. Your A-Town, right. That one is a great cover. You did a great job on that. Who did your cover?
DeVito Baldwin did that cover right there for me.
Okay. And how did you get, how did you, who is she? How were you aware of her?
I had read, one of my partners was talking about her, and he was like, this chick, man, she do a lot of book covers. I think she was telling me about this, what book was it? I think it was Dope Man Wife, I think, something like that. I think she had did that cover.
Uh-huh.
And, one of my partners, the chick who did this cover right here, man, whoever, you need to find out who she is, you know what I mean? So I did me a little research and started hunting, you know, making a few calls. And my wife finally tracked her down, and we just went from there. But she pretty. She come up with some nice covers. I like her style. Like, actually, I'm waiting on another cover right now. I got another book that's finna get ready to drop called Crazy.
Okay.
And yeah, and I'm really she doing the cover right now. So that's another project that I'm working on.
Awesome.
I got me see, Carla Dean, the editor, she's working on the manuscript right now. So I'm just waiting on them two right now to be released. Once I get them ready, we'll go ahead and build the project together.
Wonderful. I'm very familiar with Carla. I'm not so familiar with the book designer, but I'm going to look her up. Well, it's about time for us to wind down. Our other guest has been waiting. We're going to go ahead and get him on the line. But, Cole, I want to say to you, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. You're a great interview. You did very well. I know you had some concerns about that. But we'll be looking out for you. Very quickly, tell the listeners how they can find you on Facebook.
Executive Urban Authors. This is my Facebook page. I also have a fan page for A-Town Veteran. Street Lit Author Cohort is another Facebook page. And my Twitter page is Write A Lot Pub. Let me see. My website is writealotpublishing.com.
Okay.
And my
wonderful
email is writealotpublishing@yahoo.com.
Yahoo.com. Okay. All righty. Well, thank you again. We wish you all the best, much success to you, and I will be in touch with you. Let us know in the future. We'll probably have you back on to let us know what your new projects are. You have a wonderful night.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We want to acknowledge our guest, our very, very special guest, Mr. Omar Tyree. Are you there, Mr. Tyree?
Yeah, I'm happy to finally be on. Looks like we had a quick swap of times and whatnot. So 8:30 now. What time is it? Is it on the West Coast out there? So it's 5:30.
No. I'm on the East Coast too. I'm in the DC area.
Oh, okay.
I'm on the East Coast. Yeah. I actually live in Charlotte, but I'm in Maryland right now. So we are delighted to have you here. I'm sorry that you had to hold initially, but I wanted to get him in because he was, I don't know if you heard or not, but he was calling from the Georgia State Prison. So
right.
Wanted to get him out of the way first. So apologize for keeping you on the line, but we are delighted to have you here.
Yeah, I heard now, some of the interview when you were talking about the whole validation of authors, you know, being from prison and being, you know, urban street writers. And it almost sounds like, you know, we need a new genre called prison writers, you know, if it's going to be to that extent. You know, I think we shouldn't get away from what writers are to create a storyline, you know. So when we get to the point where now you have to validate that you live the story to write the story, are we talking about fiction or nonfiction here? You know, I thought storytelling was exactly that, storytelling. So it's an interesting subject that you were discussing there.
You're right. You're right. But I guess it appears that, you know, some of the readers want to know that their writers have lived that. It's kind of like that whole rap game, that if they feel, you know, you haven't lived that life, you don't have that same credibility, which you're right. It's very interesting because as writers, that's probably our greatest strength, is that we're creative and we can probably, if you're really good, write just about anything. That's what I think personally.
Right. Well, if we look at that same, you know, concept, do you think that a person of Stephen King's, you know, madness, is no way in the world Stephen King could have went through? He has a great imagination. I was just telling my son about a book called Cujo. That was a movie about a dog that got bit by a bat and had rabies and, you know, stuff like that. You just have a great imagination to say, what if? And that's a part of the fun of writing. What if this happened and then this happened and then this happened and then this happened? You know, when I have an ability to say what if, it kind of destroys a lot of the imagination that writing should give everyone, you know, to think about things that, you know, don't happen on a regular everyday basis but would blow you away. And that's been one of the problems that we've had with African-American literature, where everything is based on reality to the point where you can't get away and you can't do anything new. If you think about it on that structure of everything being based on reality, then President Barack Obama would have never thought of himself as a black president, because before he became president, we all looked at that as impossible. It's never going
right
to happen. But he dreamed that impossible dream, you know, and it's like, let me execute how I can make this happen to make it a reality. And that's where fiction comes into play, where what if this happened, if we set it up, and if these things were in play, that maybe this could come, and then our minds get a chance to explore and say, yeah, how about that? And we get a chance to think out of the box. But if everything is about stuff that already happened and you have to validate it all the time, you never really get a chance to do this thing. It's kind of like when I first started writing my books back in 1992, I was one of the first ones that started this whole, you know, urban literacy thing. I didn't call it street at that time. I just called it urban classic. And at that time, I said, hey, I have a whole lot of stories to tell about, you know, the hip-hop era and our community and young black people, you know, who are not in slavery era, because it seemed like everything coming from the black community was constantly about slavery. I said, well, I wasn't even born in a slavery era. I was born in 69. Now you got kids who weren't even born in the civil rights era. They don't even know what it means to have, you know, racial struggles now, a lot of these kids. You know, they just want to get along with everybody. In fact, I'm going to write a blog on that coming up soon. So, yeah, that's a great subject to talk about the reality of people wanting an author to live through the things that they're writing about versus having an imagination where you can imagine all types of things happening to human people.
That's right. I'm 100% on that page with you. It's funny because I hadn't read in several months. I'm a writer too, but I stopped reading because I was so frustrated with what I was finding on the shelves. And it's not fair to just apply that apply what you're saying to what we're talking about to street or urban lit. I find that to be the case with fiction in general, and when I started reading what they call chick lit, I read a couple of those, and it was the same kind of thing. I don't read paranormal books, but when I read the back of their books or the synopses, it's the same kind of thing. Is that all you know about is vampires and teenagers having sex and things like that? So I think that can go across the board. We could have that discussion about more than just street and urban lit, but that has been the criticism of that kind of fiction for years. But
right.
I know that you have shown us that you are a true writer. Now, I make a definite distinction between writer and author. Do you know what I mean by that, and do you agree with that, or do you think that it's just one and the same, it's just semantics?
No, it's not one and the same. I can write poetry, I can write hard news articles, I can write essays, I can write commentaries, I can write reviews, screenplays, yeah, all types of things. That is what you call a writer. When you're
That's
talking
right.
about an author, you're just talking about writing fiction, nonfiction, or just straight books. But if you have to jump off of just writing straight books and write a commentary piece, you know, like I write blogs, and right now I had an article on Obama and black people falling out of love because he's not giving us love or a whole lot of the policies right now. And that was a blog, a political blog, that was picked up by the Huffington Post, and it got a whole lot of hits. And I've done articles like that for Esquire, for Essence Magazine, for Ebony Magazine, where they're straight magazine news articles. And that's what writers are able to do. But as an author, a lot of authors may not have those skills.
I totally agree with you, and that's the difference. I start asking, you know, some of my guests when I, you know, select people for the interview. I ask, are you an author or are you a writer? And some don't know the difference, but I agree with you. The difference to me is a writer can write just about anything, and actually does, and an author just happens to have written, you know, a book or a couple of books. But yeah, so that's very interesting. I know that you you have a lot of things on your plate. You do a lot of different things. I've read several of your blogs. I know that you have your own publishing company. I want to talk to you about that. But for our listeners out there who, you know, I don't know that there's anybody on the line or in the chat room who's not familiar with you, but tell us how you got started, both as an author, and then tell us how you started your own publishing company and why.
Well, you know, I was a typical boy growing up in Philadelphia. I had no interest at all in reading and writing. I was a typical hard rock athlete. You know, I played football. I ran track. I got into fights all the time because it's Philadelphia, so we all grew up boxing and street fighting and whatnot. And I just happened to come through the 1980s era where the urban community took over with the whole hip-hop, breakdancing, graffiti, our dress codes, everything that we did. We just took over American culture. And so by the time I got to college, I had so much information on our parties and our music and, you know, the girls and the boys. And I was always such a keen person on picking up on details of everything that happened around us. And I really loved movies. I used to go to the movies all the time and do what I call movie marathons, where I would watch 3 or 4 films. And so I just had a knack for picking up all the key points of stories and how to tell them correctly, but it wasn't until my college year, freshman year at University of Pittsburgh, where they asked us to start, you know, writing essays and whatnot on our neighborhood and, you know, our hobbies and our families. And we had never been asked to write anything of that nature in high school. In high school, they typically asked you to write an essay about a book that you had to read, and I wasn't up on reading about Shakespeare and, you know, a whole lot of what they call classic white books. I didn't really care. I didn't read those books, and so if you asked me to write a report on a book that I didn't want to read in the first place, that report's not going to be that good. But now if you start asking me to write about my family, my people, my neighborhood, my friends, what I like to do, my hobbies, that took it to a whole other level. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Now I get a chance to control what I'm writing about. The subject is about me and my people now, and that's where I really took off in my freshman year of college, and then I've really elevated in my whole English skills, breaking down prose versus, you know, narration, and then getting a better syntax of writing structure and grammar and all that. I really took off and ended up getting an A my freshman year of English, passing into the highest level of English at the University of Pittsburgh. And then I took creative writing my freshman year, and they asked us to write essays and character pieces and poetry. And so I got a chance to do a lot of writing. I also was asked to do a student diary as a male. You know, typically males don't do diaries, but they published it in a freshman newspaper, and the whole school was reading it. And I was talking about parties, chasing after girls, you know, going to the football games, typical stuff that you would talk about on a college arena. But everybody was reading it and loving it, and I got an A in the highest level of English my freshman year. So at that point, it was like, dude, you got everybody loving what you're doing. You're good at it. You like doing it. So keep doing it. And so at that point, I said, hell, man, I'm going to go ahead and keep writing books. That was 1987, 1988, 1989, before we really had an explosion of book writers. So just imagine when I first started talking about writing books in the late 80s, a lot of my friends were like, what are you talking about? We don't write books. That's unrealistic. Just like they talk about earlier about validation. If I had nobody to validate that black people could write books, I would have never started writing books. But I said, well, hell, I'm going to be the first one to do it. Then nobody else do it, I'm going to do it. Of course, we had Iris Haley writing books. We had Toni Morrison writing books. We had, you know, what's that, Alice Walker writing books. But nobody that was really contemporary writing contemporary books. Well, it just so happened at the same time I started putting my work out, Carrie McMillan came out on the scene, and Walter Mosley came out on the scene, and B.B. Moore Campbell came out, and he was these new authors that were getting all this new attention, and I came out right in the mix of them, and it was a brand new thing when we started to establish ourselves as black people writing about different types of things. We had mystery writers back then. We had literary writers writing the whole established classical style. Then we had the contemporary writers. We had the romance and relationship writers. And then I came through with the urban. And so we had all these different types of genres, and we were all writing fun, great stuff. But then it came to a point where the readers took it over to a certain degree, and a young readers took it over, and that's where you got all the young readers who wanted the street drama over and over and over again. And then Zane started with the black erotica thing, and then, you know, our people wanted sexuality over and over and over again. And then it got to the point where nothing else would sell anymore. And so that's when it stopped being as versatile as it used to be in the 90s. You know what I mean? Where now everything is either street, black erotica and sex, or nothing. And that really destroyed a whole lot of the fun of writing in this era, in this game. But that's how I got started. The self-publishing thing was out of necessity, because back in the 90s when I first started, we had a whole bunch of Afrocentric books which talked more about, you know, black power and black education and black history. They weren't really putting out a lot of books about, you know, black storytelling and regular black people. And so at that time, you couldn't get a whole lot of books put out. You had to put them out yourself. And so I started putting out my own books and doing expo events and selling myself in 92 and 93. And by the time it got to 94, a lot of these bigger publishers started snatching up a whole lot of black authors because they knew that they could make money off of us now and black people were reading more. And so I got my first big contract in 95. And from that point on, I started writing with the big boys. But you had to get in first, where a lot of people understand that now. If nobody's going to publish your work, you have to put it out yourself. And so I started off that way. A lot of people don't know that now because my story is so long. It's been 20 years now since 1992. And so many people have, you know, caught me on the tail end of it, where it's like Omar Tyree's this New York best-selling, New York Times author and, you know, award winner and all that, but they don't know that the roots of it all was me starting my own company way back in 92 when I was in my 20s. You know, so that's the root of it. You can go to my website at OmarTyree.com and read all about it where, you know, you can get the real breakdown on how I came to be as a writer.
Yeah, your story is quite remarkable. I've read pretty much everything that I could on the website, and I actually ordered your first book, College Boy, and I'm reading your e-book series, which we're going to get into in a little bit. I love it. But, yeah, so you have a very remarkable story. Let me ask you two questions, part one and two. I want you to tell us what your favorite story has been that you've told so far. I know you've got several books out there. What has been your favorite? That's the part one of the question. And what would you say is the hardest part about being a writer?
Well, the publicity part is definitely the hardest part because, you know, writing is not as sexy as acting and rapping and, you know, dancing and, you know, some of the sexier things, particularly in the African-American community. So getting publicity was always hard. Then we went through a nice, strong period in the late 90s where, you know, black authors were getting a whole lot of publicity, particularly it was four males. I call it the big four, Michael Bazin, Eric Sharon Dickey, Elin Harris, and Omar Tyree. And we were known, man, and we were coming out with books every year, and the crowd knew us, and we could get publicity back then. But then when every new author came out, sometimes it wears out. You know, you're old now. You know what I mean? And with the new Jack Swing coming out. So publicity has always been hard to get. And I remember one time when it got to the radio station, of course, Michael Bazin is on radio all the time now with his radio show. But it got to a point where a lot of the radio stations did not want to interview us because they wanted us to pay them for ad space. And so they would say, look, we get these authors all the time who are not paying for ad space, but they want to get on and talk about their book. And so they started avoiding us. And so you would go on tour and couldn't get an interview on a radio station because they wanted you to pay for advertising. You know, so that's always been the case, trying to get publicity for who we are and what we're doing because it just wasn't looked at as being as sexy as some of the other, you know, forms of entertainment. And then your other question, I didn't forget it already. What was the other question?
Out of all the books that you've written, which one of
them
is your favorite?
Which one? Just Say No was a book that I put out in 2001 about two guys in the music industry and how indulgent that industry can be where, you know, it becomes a thing of you saying no to so many things you wanted to have in the first place. So the book is called Just Say No, and it was my favorite because it's so ultra-masculine where you got a football player and a musician, and then a football player becomes a musician's manager, and they're in their young 20s. And you're talking about two guys saying no to women wanting to sleep with you every night, and no to free clothing, and no to money and limos. And I mean, just the craziness that you go through when you're a popular musician, that the world becomes an oyster. Now, watch the irony of this. With me being able to write it as a fiction piece, I can be as honest as I want to be about all the you know, goings on with sexuality and drugs and, you know, all the ridiculous things that happen in that industry where a real-life person, Chris Brown, R. Kelly, Jay-Z, they could never tell you the reality of all the things that happened in their life in the midst of their career. Their publicist would have a heart attack. Please don't tell them about all the women. Please don't tell them about the drugs. Please don't. They never tell you about all that stuff until their career is over with. So this is a reality situation where I can be more real and keep it in fiction where I can create a character and be as honest as I want to, where if you try to get Usher to break down the reality of everything that happened in closed doors, he's thinking, ain't no way in hell I'm going to all those reality crazy stories and crazy situations I've been in. I'm not doing that at all. But a woman who was able to do that, the superhead woman that put this book out a couple of years ago, where she was talking about sleeping with all the guys, and that became a huge hit. And people denied it, and some people didn't respond to it at all. So that's where, again, when you write fiction under the guise of the truth, you can be as honest as you want without hurting anybody. And so that's the power, again, of writing fiction. But Just Say No is my favorite book because, you know, Fly Girl, of course, is a book everybody likes from the female standpoint. But I'm a male, and I'm a straight male. So I wanted to write a masculine story, but the problem was men don't read. don't want to read, don't like to read. And then women typically want to read about their own stories and their own emotional issues, and so Just Say No didn't do what Fly Girl did, you know what I mean, and all the female books. And so it really hurt my feelings that I couldn't have that book as big as a Fly Girl, because I put a lot into it, and it was a huge book, 500 and something pages of the truth of the indulgence of men, and that's just not entertainers, it's the athletes. It's businessmen. It's any men who have a whole lot of money and a whole lot of women that's chasing after you, so the world becomes your oyster, and then you can't say no because you want it all. And we talk about all that, I want it all, and you end up overdosing on it all. And so that book was just a phenomenal book, and so you've grabbed a couple of my books. Definitely check that one out, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about with honesty. You can't get any more honest than that book.
I will definitely check it out. Now that you're talking about honesty, I have another very good question for you since you brought that up. But before I ask it, I want to just remind our listeners that you're listening to the TBA Lounge, Best Authors Lounge, where best authors are made and showcased. I'm your host, Edwina Davis. You're listening to fabulous Omar Tyree, who's a renowned author, publisher, entrepreneur, and a host of other things. Let's see, their call-in number is 323-693-3857. For those of you on the line, if you have a question or comment, please press 1. For those of you in the chat room, please type your questions or comments in, and I will ask them of our guest. Omar, you'd say that Just Say No is, the raw truth, and that was one of your favorites. As I was reading your new e-book series, it's a chapter series, about the publishing industry, I can't help but think how much of this is the truth, and I wondered how you dared to say some of what you're saying and just how deep you're going to go when you're in the midst of it.
Right. Well, I'm no longer in the midst of it. You know, I'm on the outskirts. When you're old, you're out. So I can be honest. The same thing I was talking about with the musicians. If I was still in it, I wouldn't be concerned with writing it. And the reason I'm writing Corrupted, I couldn't get back in the publishing industry. Now it's like, Omar, okay, we know that you want to write those educational books where you're always trying to, you know, make a point with black people. And right now they want sex and drama from new people. And so now they're putting out new people with cheaper contracts, cheaper books. They're not selling as much as we used to. And so now it's one of those things where they look at me as being overpriced. You know, I'm like a dinosaur. And so I said, heck, man, the whole genre has been corrupted now, where now you can't get out fresh, new work. It's all about the everyday now, the same thing that everybody wants. As you said earlier, it's the same content over and over again from new people. And so now you get a new author to write the same content, because then people say, oh, he's a new author. Did you write so-and-so? It's the same content. And so now we're not allowed to be as creative, which I'm talking all about in that book Corrupted, which is a serial e-book. And I'm going to get very deep in it. I'm about halfway through it. Now we're starting to get, I had to get past the sex stuff and the personality stuff. Now we can get deep into the industry and how a lot of individuals are turned out into writing, you know, things that they don't want to write and pigeonholed, and they can't write what they really want to write. And it's all about the audience. If the audience don't want what you're trying to write, they don't want to hear it, man. And so Corrupted as an e-book is an opportunity with that new technological venue where I can say it. I probably couldn't say it within an original mainstream book that's published from the regular, you know, format of going to the bookstores and being printed up. You know what I mean? So sometimes you use an outside method to get the truth out there. But, yeah, that's the reality. That book is very real. You know what I mean? Everything in there is real. And so what I'm getting to is how a whole lot of authors, you know, once you're used and abused, then you got to sell your back with. And that's why I was trying to get into film for so long now, for the last 5 years, because I knew it was going to happen. After a while, you just run out of stories. You know, particularly when you publish a new book every single year like I was. You know, Sister right. Soldier had a chance to prolong her career because she didn't write a book for, like, what, 7 years.
Right.
Another one, what's the name? Terry McMillan was able to prolong her career because she really only wrote a book maybe every 3 to 5 years, and she still has that huge crossover audience of women. You know, so a whole lot of us who had a masculine base or a feminine base or African-American base of a certain age, a lot of them women have already read our work and have moved on. And so now with younger people, I think some of the people who have been writing Christian fiction have been able to stay around longer because some of the younger Christian fiction people will seek those type of books out since they are Christian readers. and they want that type of work. Whereas a whole lot of the other writers, you know, if people already read your work and moved on, they want the new young people now, and then you get new readers in that they want the new people, and they don't even know who you are now. And some of those individuals are like, who Omar Tyree? And I say, look, go to my website and notice all the books. My books aren't even on the shelves like that anymore. I go to the bookstores now, and sometimes they don't have any of my books. And they got the latest, you know, I guess, street and black erotica book, and it's only going to be on the shelf as long as the people are buying it. So now they won't even keep a backlist of your books on the shelf. And so it's vicious, man, and that's all the stuff that I'm going to be writing about and getting to and corrupted.
Wow, and that's what I suspected. And like I said, I've read like your first five chapters, and I suspected that everything you were saying in there was based on reality, which is scary. You know, I won't give much of the story away. I want our audience to check it out for themselves. But what I will say is this. Those of us who are just now coming into the game, it's a little scary out there to think about what's going on in the publishing industry. And I guess, you know, for you who've been in it for some time, you know the history. And I've heard that from other authors who've been around for some time that, you know, the game has always been vicious. But I think
right.
The beauty of it, for us now, for us newcomers, is that we can do what you're doing and what so many independent self-published authors are doing. Doing it for yourself and doing it on your own because you've got to hustle anyway, so why not hustle for yourself and forget about the mainstream publishers? And that's not to say that, you know, you can't still count on them for certain things or that you may not want to go mainstream, but it's not the only option, and that's a good thing.
Right. Well, they're losing a whole lot of sales of e-books as well now. They're trying to figure out how they can stay in the game, and that's going to be in some of my later chapters, you know what I mean, as it continues to unravel. And so, yeah, a whole lot of the publishers, they're scared to death now. You have editors who are scared to death because they're feeling, if I publish this person and they get an advance and then they're not able to earn their advance out because there's so many self-published authors out there now that are competing with you. And then, again, I was selling hardback. Now you got authors that can sell three books for the price of my one hardback. And so an editor has to deal with all of that, and they are scared to death. They're thinking, look here, if I put out the wrong book, I can lose my job and can't get my job back. And so we had a whole lot of black editors who have lost jobs over the last 5 years because of, you know, the lack of sales and so much competition now. And I know for all the authors who are listening, you know, it's not about hate. I know a lot of people want to get in the game and figure out, you know, I can put my own book out. But I always looked at it like, you know, if you look at the drug trade, if you got 15 drug dealers on the same corner, you know it's going to be some shootouts because some of them want to say, look, man, you're taking my customers. Get off my corner. And so when I lived in Washington, D.C., and they called it the murder capital, it was all about drug territory, shootouts over turf. And when guys are like, look, I'm losing my money because there's too many people trying to sell in my neighborhood. And so they would start shooting and killing each other. But in the book game, we can't shoot up and kill each other. So there are all these individuals selling books that are all in the same genre, and it's about who can climb to the top. And so a lot of them only have a good 3 to 5 years to sell, man, and then you praying on the star that you can stay out there. And so that's what's going on with that kind of genre, man, and it's dangerous and scary for everybody. And so that's what Corrupted is breaking down. If you don't know about Corrupted, it's an e-book, a serial e-book, which means I put out a chapter every week because, again, people read so fast. They can read your book and move on, and a lot of times they forget what they even read. And I've been hearing this for, like, the last 10 years. Once we had these book clubs, they will read your book in a week, and then you talk to them about it and say, oh, I don't remember what it was. It was pretty good, though, but I'm reading three books now, three other books, and it's like, well, what in the world? If you can't even remember what you read, what the heck is the use if you really want them to get something and have a discussion? And so it's really got to the point where now it's just a money game. You know what I mean? You sell your books, make your money, and move on to the next one where you can't even really care about what you're writing anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, you're laughing with it, man. It's like, wow, if you really care about what you're writing, and just imagine the way we used to put months and years and a lot of research and heart and soul in what we're writing, and then the audience tell you, oh, I read that book last week. I forgot what it was in there, but it was pretty good. I'm reading this other book now. We read a new book every week, and it's like, that's great, you're reading, but, man, can you at least discuss some of the points that I put my work and soul into with this? You know what I mean? Like, do you remember the characters or some of the issues? That, can we at least have a discussion on it? Oh, well, I don't remember anything to have a discussion. You know? You know, see, it gets
that's
to that point, man.
True.
It's like, wait a minute now. We can't even discuss my work, and you support me to run it?
That's very
yeah,
true.
Man,
I'm laughing in part, Omar, to keep from crying because, like I said, I'm new at this, and I'm with you. It's taken me a while to write what I've written. I've put my heart and soul in it, and I wouldn't want to hear that either. So it's a new day, and it'll be very interesting, to say the least. We're about to run out of time. I want you to give our audience your information and tell us what's ahead for you.
Okay, omartyree.com for all the people who have never heard of me. And that's another thing. You know, I feel like Big Daddy Kane now with some of the new hip hop people, like, who's Big Daddy Kane? You know? Or you say LL Cool J, and they're like, oh, the guy that's on TV, and even Ice Cube. As famous as Ice Cube was with the whole NWA gang from the West Coast, people look at him as a comedian actor now. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Ice Cube, I said, well, where do you think he got the name Ice Cube from? That's his rapper name, and he was a hard, cold dude with the stuff he was rapping about. They got no idea. You know, so it's just every 5 years you have to rename yourself and rebuild him. And so Puffy, what he's been able to do for a number of years has been great because he understands that. You gotta keep rebranding yourself for a new young audience. And that's what we're going through right now.
That's right.
So, yeah, you can
all
go
right,
to my
so.
Website. I'm also on Twitter at Omar Tyree at Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, but my Facebook account has been loaded up with 5,000 people years ago, so you got to go to the fan pages to jump on to the Facebook account because they only allow you 5,000 people, and then you go to a fan page. So I've got multiple fan pages out there. But if you Google my name, for a lot of people that have never heard or not up on it, you Google my name, and then you'll find so much work and so many articles and so many links. You know, because you're talking about 20 years of writing, where it's not just been, you know, books. It's been essays and short stories and articles and, you know, conversations. And I've been at 60 different colleges speaking about, you know, black arts and literature and whatnot. And so it's been a long career. But, again, with young people and new people, they don't know. So you have to keep educating people and keep rebranding yourself and keep talking about what you've done and keep doing new stuff.
That's right. And we do appreciate you. Your new stuff is great. Like I said, I'm getting ready to read your very first book, College Boys. So, Omar, I, for one, am a fan of yours. Loved having you on. We wish you the absolute best in your future. And we ask that you keep in touch.
All right. Thank you very much. And if you don't know, Omar Tyree, check out his website, and you'll see all my books pop right up in your face. And you can go out there and order them to get the stores to carry me again.
Thank you. Have a wonderful night. You've been listening to the Best Authors Lounge. That's TBA Lounge. I'm your host, Edwina Davis. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next Monday, same place, same time.